Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 12th. I'm Ray Graff. You thinking about buying or selling a home? Well, are you in luck? We have three real estate professionals in the studio with us today to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate, Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District, and David Patton of Adirondack Mountain Home Inspections are here waiting for your questions. In fact, they are actually right here very early waiting for your questions. So call now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. And after all, it's a call-in show, right? So call. It's real estate right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you buying or selling a home or residential property? You're looking to increase your property's value? Well, we have three real estate professionals in studio today to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is with Keller Williams Capital District and also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She is a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. And David Patton is the founder of Adirondack Home Mountain Inspections. He has spent decades working on log and timber frame homes. He's an educator and an inspector and all sorts of things. Alexander, Renata, and David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, thanks.
Nice to have you here. Give us a call at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Ordinarily, we only have one or two guests in here. And so sometimes, you know, the engineer forgets who's on what mic. But I think Zach's got it worked out now. I got a thumbs up or certainly some digit of some kind. The email address here is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org if you want to email your question. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Well, panel, I saw a headline. And I must confess, I only just saw it in passing earlier in the week or maybe late last week that existing home inventories are at record lows around the country. Is this the case?
That is correct.
Around here as well?
Yes, very much so.
So it's it is a seller's market.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, we've since I've been doing real estate the last 6 years, this has been the lowest inventory we've experienced, and it is creating a lot of frustration for buyers because there's certainly a lot more buyers out there than there are sellers at the moment. The hope is now that we're beginning to go into spring and everything's warming up and the snow has finally melted, that more sellers will respond to the demand in the market and start putting their houses on the market.
On the flip side, if you're a seller and you're on the fence, this is the time to do it.
Because you'll get top dollar.
Top dollar, and inventory is moving quicker, less days on the market. Talk to a professional and get your house value in order and get it on the market. We need that inventory.
Are there more buyers or just less sellers?
Less sellers.
Interesting. Now, I'm trying to figure out why that is. Interest rates, while they talk about increasing them, still pretty low for the housing market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd think that there would be a ton of buyers, and you'd think there'd be enough sellers out there. I'm confused by all this.
Well, I have a couple clients who are going to sell, but they can't find what they want to buy. And so it's a little bit of a downward spiral. So sellers who have homes who are looking to either downsize or upgrade aren't putting their houses on the market until they find what they're looking for. They're aware, as Renata said, once they put their house on the market, it's going to move quickly. But if they haven't found what they're looking for, they're hesitant to list their house. So that's actually one of the challenges that we're facing. So we need sellers who aren't looking to buy, who might be relocating or moving to a rental.
That doesn't strike me as something that happens that often. Usually you're not going to sell to move to a rental, are you? Does that percentage is?
Well, I think you're right. Most people will either upsize or downsize or relocate completely out of the area. because the inventory has slowly come down, I think there's a fear of we're not going to find what we're looking for. There are ways to get around it. You can make your listing contingent on you finding a home. So there is ways to make it work. I think you just, the sellers need to talk to somebody that will help them through the entire process and take that fear away and find them homes.
Our topic today, as you may have surmised, is real estate, and we're joined by Alexander Monticello, Renata Lewis, and David Patton. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Shall we go to the phones? Let's go to Bill in Glenville. Bill, you're first.
Thank you, Ray. I got a question. I'm interested in, I actually got engaged recently, so there are two homes involved, so I'm interested in downsizing, going to one home instead of two. That's a bit of a problem, but I still have a son, and he's somewhat interested in buying the house. How would I go about that? And the second part question is, what about rent-to-own?
Ah, the old rent-to-own question. All right, there are two parts to this one. Panel, who wants to go first? Don't everybody jump
well,
at once.
I'll take the second part, the rent-to-own. Generally, I don't think rent-to-own is a viable option. I think either you can rent it for 12 months, and then you can evaluate at the end of 12 months where the market is, and if the buyer's interested in making a purchase, you can take into account at that time what they've maybe paid in rent. I guess if it's a family member or your son, you have a little bit more flexibility. But rent to own from stranger to stranger, I think, is less likely to be successful.
Okay. And then the first part was, did you want your son to purchase the house, or are you just going to?
Yeah, he's interested. I guess you get through, go to a lawyer, get the contract drawn up, and
that's correct.
And
yep.
He owns it.
Yep. So now, you decide how you want to play with the financing. Obviously, get him pre-approved. I'm sure there's going to be a mortgage involved, and you, as a seller,
right,
to your son, can, it will be like almost an intra-family transfer. So you could give him a little bit of a better deal if you choose to.
Right.
How good of a deal can you do? In other words, aren't you doing, if you say you have a son and you have a $300,000 home and you say, you know what, you're just starting out, Sonny, I'm going to let you have this for $75,000. Aren't you killing the values for everybody in the neighborhood?
No, not necessarily. There's a lot of intrafamily transfers that happen for a dollar. You could just give somebody a home. It's still a real estate transaction, so it has to be recorded. But really, it's your option on how you want to handle it financially. It will be recorded in a different statistic, but it really wouldn't kill the neighborhood.
Wouldn't affect the property values.
No.
All right, Bill, thank you for that one. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Katie in Schenectady is next. Katie.
Hi there. We're contemplating, we have a 90-plus-year-old house that has, at various times, been a single-family home, a daycare, a rental, and then we've purchased it and lived there for about a decade, and it's ripe for some structural upgrades in terms of plumbing, but also some aesthetic upgrades and renovation. But we're in an area where we're already pushing the upper limits of the pricing ranges. And so we don't want to make this into a property that, you know, we want to be able to get some return on our investment. We don't want to make it into a property that is then inaccessible compared to other properties in our neighborhood. And we're figuring that there's some magic formula, sweet spot that says, you know, obviously kitchens and bath renovation are always big, pools are a no-no. You know, there's certain kinds of renovations that seem to have a return on investment value and some that don't. But is there a number that says, you know, your house value versus what you invest in a renovation in order to get sort of maximum value out of it? We probably wouldn't be selling in the near future, so we're not trying to renovate it to sell it, but eventually obviously we would.
David.
When you're looking at a house that you're going to sell, it's my opinion that where structural issues come in, and I know that you're talking about bathrooms and kitchens and other rooms, but from a structural standpoint, you can't afford going forward not to do certain things to that house in order to bring them
in. Cannot afford.
Okay. There are certain things that really need to be done, otherwise you're going to lose the value of it, irrespective of what the houses are selling for in the community. In other words, you can't continue to let it go. There are certain things you just need to do. And one of the reasons for that is that if someone were to come along and make an offer on that property and you listed it at a lesser figure, one that you thought took into account the amount of money that was necessary to do that work, then the home inspector comes in. Now, when the home inspector comes in and finds a deficiency that's structural, then he's going to make a big deal about that, and someone's going to end up paying for it, and it's probably going to come back on you, unless the house is sold as is. So my opinion would be that at least where structure is concerned, to invest in the thing that is one of your greatest assets, and that's the house. You really need to you need to approach it that way.
Okay, Katie, thanks a lot. So basically, improvements, additions, and stuff secondary to making sure it is all there and everything is in good working order.
Yeah, the bones of the house, as everybody refers to the bones of the house. But the basic structure, I think most real estate agents would agree that the basics have to be in good shape.
But what about, you mentioned selling as is and you're lowering the price. The inspector comes in, if you have already listed all these things that you think have to be done and you're selling it for a much less, then what's the hang-up?
Well, you're selling it as is, but if the inspector comes in, the inspector comes in as a neutral third party. He may be, and the inspector is working for the buyer. The inspector is not working for the seller. So as the inspector comes in, they don't know. They don't need to know how much the house sold for, and they don't need to know what the conditions of sale are. But they come in and find something like a new roof, for example, which is going to cost well over $15,000. The way the state law reads is that any major deficiency that that is going to cost, in the home inspector's opinion, any more than $1,500 will get put on the table and negotiated as a part of the price. Now, that doesn't mean that the seller is going to say anything other than, I'm as low as I can go, I won't go any lower. However, if that inspector does find something, all it does is complicate the conversation.
Let's take a break here. It is Real Estate Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Alexander Monticello is here, Renata Lewis and David Patton, and you will be back with more calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring Anderson Windows, Therma True Doors, Owens Corning Shingles, Valspar Paints, Cabot Stains, and more at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Kerry Haddad Gallery, presenting Interlock, an exhibit of contemporary paintings and drawings inspired by American pop minimalism, through April 30th, open daily, CarrieHaddadGallery.com. Speed Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward, DLSPECHT.com. And Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, Asia, and the U.S. since 1987 with a concert of voice, piano, and strings, April 23rd at 3 p.m. at the United Methodist Church, SaratogaChamberPlayers.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551. The telephone number or the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined today by David Patton, Renata Lewis, and Alexander Monticello. And let's take care of a couple of emails before we get back to the phones. Here we go. This one from Christopher. Could the guests discuss some of the programs for first-time home buyers? 20% down is hard when you have no equity in a house. Fair question, Christopher.
Well, the good news is you don't need 20% down to purchase a house generally. There's a lot of first-time home buyer. There's a lot of just mortgage options. If you have as little as 3.5% down, you can go with what's called an FHA loan, which is very common for first-time home buyers. If you're a veteran, there's a VA loan, which allows you to put zero down. So those are some good options. If you have a little bit of a horizon and you're in the capital region, there's
a little bit of a horizon?
Well, sorry. If you have about 12 months before you make your purchase,
I see. Okay.
Then you can look into a first-time home buyer program that the Affordable Housing Partnership puts forward.
Mm-hmm.
They have basically a savings program. It's a 10-month program where they'll match your money up to, I think, $7,000. So at the end of the 10-month program, you put away about $1,500. They'll give you an additional $7,000 towards the purchase. So you could use that in conjunction with, say, an FHA loan, and you would have a substantial part of the cash you'd need.
This one came in from Linda in New Windsor. I'm looking to buy a small, older home using a pre-approved VA home loan. What kinds of house property issues might cause the VA to not approve the purchase?
VA loan is a little bit more specific in the appraisal and in the inspections. So we just need to make sure that when you're looking at a home, it passes lead-based paint issues, structural issues. There is actually a booklet that you can take a look at that was published. Railings need to be present if there's more than three steps. The roof has to have at least 3 years' life. David, you could probably help me out on this.
Yeah, the railing issue, again, it's a little stricter, but not all that different. It depends on how the home inspector comes to the table in terms of how he inspects it. You can't let anything. There are certain things during an inspection that you might trade off. I mean, it's as the inspector looks at the issues with a house, there are some things, obviously, that are more important than others. On the other hand, railings 30 inches off the ground from grade to the top of a deck, there has to be railings on it. That's not going to be the definable difference. I don't know whether VA now is requiring metals testing. They're not.
No.
Yeah.
No. You know, no water in the basement. So of the major issues that they'll be looking at.
Right.
Well, that seems like it might be an inspection breaker anyway.
Right,
if you've got a puddle or a lake in the basement.
Most basements have moisture of some sort in them. Either there's water on the floor, but in a lot of cases you're going to find, if you look at the junction of the wall to the floor, you're going to find some evidence that water was there or is there. It's just one of those things that you deal with in a lot of houses.
Okay, so the VA is slightly more strict. The federal government with their sticky fingers involved.
Yeah.
Okay. This one's from Michael, who writes, I'm hopefully buying a house coming up soon, and from an inspection standpoint, should I let a bad septic system leach field stand in the way of our negotiations? Would the seller not be as inclined to fix the problem and move on to the next buyer in this current market? It's most likely an issue that would have to be resolved at some point, but do you think they may pass on fixing it now to try to find a new buyer that will accept the problem with a lack of current inventory? And that's from Michael. Interesting question.
The difference is going to be, is the buyer going to secure a mortgage? Because
right.
If the buyer goes to most any kind of conventional mortgage lending institution, that issue is going to have to be resolved before the fact and not after the fact. If it's a cash buyer, then you can make that you can put that on the table as a contingency and maybe talk your way around it. But
that's correct.
But where lending institutions are involved, that'll have to be resolved, and in most cases,
repaired
at the seller's expense.
And repaired before they actually close on the loan.
Right. Before the bank will say, "Okay, here's the money."
Yes, you have to have the sewage, the plumbing too.
That's a big one.
Yes.
All right, this one came in from JVBP. We built a now 2-year-old residence on 1.4 acres, having 270 feet of frontage on Ballston Lake. Talking with local realtors, it appears that they don't place enough consideration on these special features when we ask for their evaluation. Do we need to list with a potentially non-local Lakes Waterfront specializing agency to ensure recovering the costs that we've incurred? And that's from JVBP.
Well, a couple thoughts. I would recommend maybe talking to three different realtors. It doesn't hurt to talk to somebody who knows waterfront properties. I think that's a great idea. But if you talk to three different agents and they're giving you three numbers and you don't like any of those three numbers, perhaps your number might be off and the real estate professionals might have a more accurate assessment. The other thing I would just caution is I always remind my clients that the house is never worth the sum of its parts. So you can add up all of the improvements you've made to the house, and unfortunately, you're probably not going to sell the house for the total sum of the improvements.
And you could also get an appraiser into the house to get a true estimate of what the bank feels it's worth, because ultimately, unless it's a cash deal, you are selling that home to the bank, and we need to make sure that it appraises.
What sort of fluctuations will you get from one bank appraiser to the next?
I think the bank appraisers will be fairly close in price. I don't think there's a big range. Different realtors may have a wider range, just maybe based on their knowledge and how they are factoring in the water view and the frontage, and of course any updates and improvements that the seller has made. So it's all factored in and balanced out.
I would imagine that the factor of time for some of these places that are on the lake, in other words, if you can afford to hold on to them.
Yes.
If you bought a place on Lake George 50 years ago, it's cha-ching now, right?
Yes.
So maybe Boston Lake would be the same way.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Well said, David. Always agree with the host.
I'm with you.
Man of a few words.
Sailing along here. Nice to have you here.
Not always. Like you.
James in Poughkeepsie. James, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I feel like I might have heard the answer to this question a little bit, but here it is. I'm 31. I feel like I'm going to be ready to buy a house in maybe about a year. And I work in the HVAC business. So I would love to retrofit a house to make it much more energy efficient. But my concern is that I might put more into that type of upgrade than I would see on a return. So one, is there a value in doing that? Or if my goal is to have an energy efficient home, should I maybe wait until I am in a house that I want to stay in?
When you talk about upgrading, and you're an HVAC professional, what is the scope of what you're describing here?
On one side would be the comfort, heating and cooling of the house. So maybe something along the lines of a highly efficient heat pump,
right?
In conjunction with a more efficient means of creating hot water. And in addition to that, insulating the house, upgrading things along those lines to just keep the heating or cooling in and to produce those two things more economically.
All of those are important. I guess the thing to consider would be the current state of that element of the house right now. In other words, do you have a furnace that's beyond its useful life and that needs to be replaced, or are you taking a perfectly good situation and making it better because that's your business and you know better?
Right, I definitely get that. So my goal would be to first buy a place that is in need of these type of upgrades.
Right.
But there, you can obviously spend a big difference between going with something that is suitable for a house or going with something that is much more efficient. So I don't know if it would be worth the money to make that leap in a house that I hope to sell in maybe 7 or 8 years, as opposed to waiting to do that type of upgrade in the house that I'm going to possibly retire in.
Well, if you're going to do it, probably do it right from the get-go. It also, I don't know how the other people here feel about it, but it depends on the house. I mean, if you're going to take a house that can be flipped, in other words, if you're going to be spending $90,000 to $120,000 on a house and going to flip it, you need to know who your client's going to be. You need to build to the sale. Everybody's concerned about efficiency. There's no question about it. And if you put two houses together, the one that's going to cost the customer the least money is the one that's going to sell first. But I don't mean to make it complicated, but sometimes it is. And I know a bunch of people in the trades that are contemplating or have done exactly what you're talking about. You have to be careful. You can't let your passion run away with it. So I would.
That's my biggest concern.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I just control yourself.
Words to live by. And again, David, well said. We're joined today on this program by Renata Lewis, Alexander Monticello, and David Patton. It's Real Estate on the Show today, 800-348-2551. Over to Chris in Glenville. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Hello. My question is, we're, you know, getting ready to sell the house in probably 3 or 4 years. We've been here about almost close to 20. What, in terms of renovations to a home, I mean, we have some pretty old bathrooms that certainly could benefit from some renovations. But I'm wondering, what gives you, you know, are we going to get that back if we sell it? Is it worthwhile? What about things like siding, bathrooms, that kind of thing?
Well, again, the bathrooms and the kitchens are the big ticket item, and that's what buyers are looking for. You know, what price range are you in as far as the house that you're in right now? I guess depends in factoring how much money you can put into the home to get as much back as you can. Siding, curb appeal, all important. If you do siding that's energy efficient, you could add into that value as well. You can look the values of return on investment. To give you an idea of, there is a chart to give you an idea of what you can get back, and depending how long you're going to actually enjoy the use of these things, if it is 3 to 5 years, you should get a lot of that money back.
The curb appeal is, again, because of my background, and I just feel that that in a lot of cases, people will be attracted to a house like they're attracted by a car. You know, the car may not work for them once they get in and sit in it. The same thing with a house. But the fact is that if you like the way a house looks from the outside, you're going to be much more inclined
to go in,
to want to go into it and to look at it and to make excuses for why something isn't quite up to snuff, but you can make that work for you by investing in it after the fact.
I see. All okay. Right. Thank you very much.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. At what point when you're doing renovations do you say to yourself, at what point can you reach the decision that, geez, it'd be much easier just to tear the whole blasted place down?
Well, that's something you want to determine as you get out of the car.
Asking for a friend here, how much does it cost to tear a whole house down?
Well, the cost of demolition on a house runs. It's pretty expensive now because someplace in that house there may be asbestos or there may be.
Yeah.
And it may end up getting.
What, 50, 100 bucks?
Yeah.
150 bucks?
Probably someplace between, to take a house down, someplace between $10,000 and $20,000.
Oh, a mere bag of shells. Okay, yeah, I'm going to make a call. 800-348-2551. It's the Real Estate Show. And boy, what fun we're having. Chris and Colin E. Chris, you're on.
Hello?
Hello?
Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, you're on the air.
I was taken aback because I'm not in Colony. I'm calling from the Goshen area in New York. How are you doing?
Well, our call screeners are probably drinking again, but wherever you're calling from, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. Well, earlier you were mentioning inventory, and I just wanted to add something of interest. It seemed like you were discounting the idea of people downsizing and then going to rentals. I would say that depending on the market, you should really look at the math. For instance, I could give you personal experience. I downgraded from a four-bedroom colonial in my village. I was paying over $16,000 in taxes. I moved into a luxury two-bedroom, two-bathroom, underground garage, everything included apartment that I rent for $24,000 a year. I no longer have $16,000 in taxes. I no longer have maintenance. I no longer pay high insurance. And the people sometimes put too much leverage or own or benefit on the tax deductions on their returns. You really don't get a very big rate depending on where you're scaled in your return status as far as the IRS is concerned. But I'm saying do the math, because there are people like myself who downsize of a certain age, they move into a luxury apartment, and
okay, we lost you, but I think we get the point there, Chris. Anybody want to comment?
I mean, it makes sense for sure. I most people will get into a home because they are ready to build some wealth. When you do rent, that money is something that just kind of goes away and you have nothing to show for it. But if you're at a point in your life where you're ready to downsize and you have the house paid off and really it's just the taxes that you're worried about, yeah, I mean, hey, being in a nice luxury home and
underground garage,
I'm there.
Forget about it.
Only you'll be in Aruba.
All right, let's go to Tom in Saratoga Springs. Tom, you're on.
It's in the same realm as the last caller. A $300,000 house bought today, 20 years from now, if you rented an apartment, which I do, I've owned three houses, I made money off of them, except for all the money I put into them over the 15 years I've owned them. Is it actually just an emotional purchase, more than it is? Because they're talking about the rake, the mower, the shovel, everything else that goes along with it, ruining every weekend, taking care of the yard, and living in a nice apartment. I'd rather be able to go to Aruba or go someplace on the weekend and not
I like
on my
this
yard.
Guy.
I don't know.
I mean, is there actual money in the $300,000 house now, not counting 20 years ago when you went through a big crisis where you could have lost your shirt? Is there actually any money to be made off of the house?
Well, I think this is interesting. I think, you know, it depends on the financial situation of the buyer. I think for some people in middle America, right, if they're making $50,000 and they're buying a $200,000 house, the house might actually allow them to have a bit of a savings. It becomes like a 30-year nest egg. And they do, at the end of that 30 years, have something to show for. I guess if you have other investments or other ways to park your money, maybe renting makes more sense because you can invest your money in other options that may provide a different return. But I think in general, over the long haul, it bears out that if you're buying a home and you're going to be there for 25, 30 years and work on paying down your mortgage, you're probably better off than you would if you rented for 30 years.
Yeah, I think my aha is the savings part. I think if you don't have the mortgage, most people will not be able to put that money away and save it. So I think it's almost that extra little cushion where you're living there, you have to live somewhere, you have to have a roof over your head, a place to raise your family. You had mentioned that you had three houses. You probably had a smaller house, upsized, downsized, and now you're enjoying renting because you financially can budget for that. And I believe that had a lot to do with you being a homeowner at that point.
Isn't the standard wisdom that the home ownership is like the path to not necessarily wealth, but financial independence?
Yes.
Isn't that sort of one of the big steps in the American dream?
Yes, it is. But owning a home, it's a forced savings bank.
Yes.
It's
gratifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's that 1% that we get now or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But that was the dream, or that was the ideal, as our parents told us that we had to, at our earliest convenience, go out there and invest in America by owning our own home, and that would end up being our greatest asset.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, that's probably not true. But for a lot of other people, that still is something that that creates a degree of comfort and works for them.
We're going to take a break here. Our guests today, David Patton, Renata Lewis, and Alexander Monticello. Our number is 800-348-2551. As we talk real estate, we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sales services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Albany Parking Authority, offering more than 5,000 public parking spots in Albany. ParkAlbany.com for on-street and garage options. Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio. FortHillAutoBody.com. And Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends.
the joy of talking to three realtors during the breaks. It's the Real Estate Show. It's 2:42 on a Wednesday afternoon. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. You know, David Patton, Renata and Alexander have been on the show before, and we've been through this drill, but what I really want to know about is log cabin homes. Frankly, it sounds fascinating to me. Tell me all about log homes.
Well, we'll need more than more time than you've
okay.
got.
Okay, well, you have 20 seconds, so go right ahead.
Well, the log home business started getting sophisticated about 1975 when a lot of log home manufacturers started manufacturing or milling logs as opposed to cutting them down in the backyard. And right up until they grew, their segment of the custom home business was not that great, probably 3 or 4%. In 2007 and 2008, when the bottom dropped out, there were probably just before that about 200 manufacturers in the country. After that, and as we came back, we're now looking probably at about 100. But the fact is that there are still a lot of people out there who have always dreamed of owning a log home, and that boy, when I retire, I'm going to have a log cabin or a log house. The percentage of log structures now that are primary homes as opposed to secondary homes has grown, and so there's still that there. And now that the housing industry has picked up, then our percentage of the pie has gotten a little better.
So, Renata, you said you sold a few of these over the years.
Mm-hmm.
What's the advantage of a log home as far as, you sell quite a few properties?
Yes. It's a particular buyer, somebody that is specifically looking for a log home. They seem to have interest in it. They've done some research in it. And
are they comfortable? Are they warm?
They're very comfortable. It's a different inspection process, different structure on the home. Some of them do not have basements. Some of them will be put on a concrete slab or, on a basement. A little bit more maintenance from what I know, just listening to some of the inspections as far as the exterior. But overall, they're beautiful. They're very comfortable, open. And very, very custom. It really does allow the buyer, if they're building one, to put in what they really, really want and customize it as they want.
Go ahead.
People tend to, as I say, they work themselves towards that log home they're going to build. They end up perhaps upgrading. They'll do the granite countertops. They'll spend more money in the bathroom because it's a destination home, I call it. In other words, it's a house that they plan for over a period of time. People always ask, how do they appraise? In other words, what's the real value?
Yeah.
We can talk about our values and things like that if any of the callers want to. But in terms of appraisals, they should appraise at what a comparable custom stick-built home will appraise at.
Okay.
In other words, you're not losing any money certainly by living or by buying a log home as you look at one in the neighborhood. You tend to find neighborhoods that have more log homes in them and not find a neighborhood that's got five vinyl two-story houses in a row and then a log cabin. That's probably not going to be
the case. No, I don't see those too often in ye olde Delmar.
Every once in a while somebody wants to make a statement though and they'll do that.
All right, let's go to Steve in Albany. Steve, you're on. Hello? Steve? Did we lose Steve in the log cabin discussion? Hello, Steve, are you there? Oh, we lost Steve. I think he was enthralled. Let's go over to Ann in West Stockbridge. Ann, you're on.
Hello. I had a comment about one of your guests made about fixing up bathrooms and kitchens prior to selling as a way to sell. And I'm selling a house, but I've been looking also, and one of the things I hate is when somebody's fixed up they obviously put a lot of money into the bathroom or the kitchen, especially the kitchen, and you're paying for it, but you don't like it. So going into a house and ripping out a brand new kitchen because you don't like, I end up not wanting to buy those homes because I can't bring myself to tear something apart that's new.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's one comment.
Okay.
But then I am selling a house that I overpaid for. I was coming from out of town. It's in the Berkshires, and seemed like a good price to me, but it wasn't. I had a bad realtor who didn't help me see that.
Okay.
And had picked out a inspector, building inspector, who didn't pick up on any of the stuff that was wrong, which turned out to be a lot. The seller had gorgeous, gorgeous taste, and just, you know, the place looked wonderful. And then I came after I bought it to figure out all the things that were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to lose probably at least $100,000 in the sale.
Ouch.
And I'm trying to figure out what to, you know, just whether I should, how much of the structural stuff, how much of the stuff the building inspector didn't point out I should do.
Okay.
To sell it.
I think we got that. All right, panel.
Well, part of it I don't understand because what structural issues are there that didn't get addressed?
Well, there's some. It's an old house. It's a 150-year-old house.
Okay.
It's got water issues in the basement that have resulted in foundation issues. And the house is actually, the basement is dirt built on a slant to accommodate the water intake in the basement because they knew it was going to get wet. So it goes out, goes on a slant, and then goes out a drain.
Okay.
In the floor. So that's one of them. Then there's some, it's got new weather, you know, the weather window things, and they're not good ones. They're really bad ones.
Yeah. Well, in general, maybe we can get a generalized sort of answer to this, Renata. You're nodding your head.
this is the really good market for you to get the most money for the house. I just actually dealt with a seller that was in a similar situation. She bought in 2005, I believe, and was coming out of the area.
Yeah, that's what I bought, actually.
Yep. You guys bought at the peak, and she was worried she wasn't going to get the money back. And we went through the house. We touched it up. We did have a pre-home inspection done just to catch anything that may come up at the home inspection. And we did push the market, and we actually ended up in a multiple offer situation.
Nice.
Actually did get all her money back plus a little bit. The renovations that she did put into the house, she did not get back. However, they did help to sell the house because of the appeal.
Right.
So as long as you're saying you have a beautiful home, you know, maybe just address some of the major issues if needed. However, if you're ready to sell, talk to a pro right now. You can get the most money for the value in today's market.
And that would be really the key, is getting a pro in there.
Yes.
To say, well, you really need to get this done. And you may not get all that you have put in, but you may make your money back on your original.
Exactly.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Bob in Elizaville, Bob.
Oh, gosh. Was across the room doing a little renovation.
Splendid.
Question. There are certain kinds of relatively new developments as possible investments in a home for sale, like solar, like mini split heating systems. How do these things stack up today? So maybe you don't want to put in a pool, but are those kinds of investments of real value?
All right, let's go right around the room. We'll start with Alexander.
You know, I'm not sure that adding solar adds too much value to the house. I think, you know, generally speaking, I think with most improvements, you're not going to get 100% of that back. I think earlier, if you listened, I said that the house is never worth the sum of the parts. The more expensive the improvement, the less probably less likely you are to get it all back. I know solar is a big
two things, like an investment in the kitchen, say.
What's
all right. What about relative to an investment in the kitchen, Renata?
No, the kitchen, you definitely, again, we were just discussing this at break. The renovations that you're doing really need to be A, for you. I speak to a lot of sellers, hey, should I redo the kitchen right now? You know, my question is like, why haven't you done this update or this improvement years ago? Don't do it just for the sale of the house. If you're doing it just for the sale of the house, maybe improve the backsplash or maybe just get the countertop done or some new hardware. But if you're going to do a whole renovation on a kitchen, do it because you're going to enjoy it, because you want to do it, and, you know, at least enjoy it for 5 to 7 years if you want to get any of the investment back on that investment.
Isn't that the conventional wisdom that you invest in things like the kitchen, like the bathroom? What I was wondering was, and, you know, just your previous caller mentioned that she's seen homes that have kitchens that just don't attract her.
Right.
What of the possibility that with respect to certain investments in the kitchen, if, for example, you're dealing with appliances, must you deal with stainless steel and stone in order to sell the house?
Mm.
But getting away from that, I was referring to mechanical things like heating, like hot water. The mini split systems are relatively new here in America, and they're taking off. Even if you don't get 100% back, does a heating system of that sort, as opposed to hot air and some of the other kinds of mechanical investments?
All right. David Patton.
Even though the systems are better, and obviously the on-demand water systems, some of the geothermal, depending on where you are specifically, the split systems there sometimes will be an advantage when you go to resell. The further south you are, the better. The further north, they don't really work as well. But from a mechanical standpoint, as opposed to the aesthetics, which we're all concerned about, putting a kitchen cabinet in there that the buyer doesn't like, you need to determine for yourself whether you're improving for yourself or improving for the sale of the home. And as you heard me say before, if you're listening to the show, I'm all about the basics of the house. That specifically would have to do with heating, air conditioning, plumbing, and electrical.
Yeah.
As that house is inspected and someone goes to look at it, if it's a structurally sound house and all of the infrastructure, meaning all of the plumbing, electrical, HVAC, if that is all good, you're going to come out of that better than if you're going in there looking at a remodeled bathroom or a remodeled kitchen. So spend your money on the basics that make the house work.
I like it. Our number is 800-348-2551. Pete in Gilderland. Pete.
Yes, hello. Mine's maybe too broad a question, but I'll give it to you, see if you can throw out a few opinions. Kind of looking at properties in the Adirondacks and debating at some point, it'll be the next couple of years, I'll be buying a piece of land, buying a house, or buying a house and fixing it up. So I know it's a broad question. Is there any, I'll just listen to any comments on those, what I might maybe should be looking for, if there's any opinions on that.
Okay.
Have you ever built a new home?
No, I have not, and I wouldn't be building it. I'd be contracting.
Well, that's what I mean. In other words, contracting a home. So, have you ever done that?
I have not. No.
Okay.
Not a whole home. No.
The process for some people is enjoyable, and for others is less than that. So. From a total value standpoint, once again, it depends on what you're building. If I bought a piece of property, for example, for $50,000 and put a $250,000 house on it, and I was all done with that whole project in 9 months, the question is that sum total now actually worth $300,000 on the market? And that has to do with what you built, with what your preferences were, with how custom it is, with how desirable that house is, with the values in the neighborhood in terms of houses that have been sold or that are for sale. So building a new house, if you're going to stay in it for, in my opinion, for 7 to 10 years, then yes, build a house that you like. Keep in mind where you are. Anybody got anything?
Well, buying raw land has a lot of risk. So if you're just looking for land before you purchase, does it percolate? Does it need septic? Does it have a well on it? How many times do you have to drill? So I guess getting really good information on the area, the land, and what you could run into as far as, you know, additional money that needs to be spent is very important. And everything else that
it's much easier to find a set of plans that you like It's much easier to find a house than it is a piece of land. The search for land, as I tell people, when you drive up and down the road and you're looking at, it's really a mystery to most people. They don't know where they're going to be comfortable when they build this thing, unless it's in a subdivision somewhere, and then it's lot three as opposed to lot one. But when you get off the beaten path a little bit, and certainly get into the Adirondacks and start looking at it, then you're, you know, what is the municipality? All these small towns up there, if that's where you're going, where's your comfort zone going to be? So the choice of that parcel of land is probably going to be more difficult than the house it is, or the house itself.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it right there. Alexander Monticello, how do we find out more about Monticello Real Estate?
You can look us up online at MonticelloNYS.com.
All right, and we also link from our website. Renata Lewis, you're everywhere. How do we
find out
about you?
Just Google renatashomes.com.
Renatashomes.com. And then you,
well,
Mr. Log Cabin Man.
There's lots of things. There's Select Sotheby's, okay. Realty.com.
All right, David Patton.
David Patton. Or there's Adirondack Mountain Home Inspections. Either way.
Fair enough. Well, thank you three for being here.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, sir.
800-348-2551 is the number. I'm not sure why I'm giving you that as the show is over. But, you know what? Jot it down for tomorrow. We're going to do another show. It's about hiking or biking or something. I don't know. Support comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials. Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, presenting John Freeman Gill, author of The Gargoyle Hunters, Friday, June 2nd, University Club of Albany. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again to Alexander Monticello, Renata Lewis, and David Patton for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. And our phones were answered by Carol Lapani today, our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, as I said, we'll discuss hiking and biking, one of my favorite topics, so I'm sure you'll want to tune in for that. Right now, though, stand by for news.